गणपते गुं हवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमं ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणां ब्रह्मणस्पत आनशृण्वन्नोतिभिः सेदसातनम् ॐ श्रीमहागणपतये नमः सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः वेदान्तडिण्डिमास्तत्त्वम् एकमुद्घोषयन्ति यत् आस्तां पुरस्तात्तत्तेजः दक्षिणामूर्तिसंहितम्. सो लेट्स् गो टु द टेक्स्ट् टुडे. वी वांट टु टुडे वी वांट टु द मेडिटेशन्. ओप्स्. सो we're now on number 77. So let's read that one. Sukhamalpam bahu klesho. Sukhamalpam bahu klesho. Vishayagrahinam drinam. Vishayagrahinam drinam. Anantam brahmani. ब्रह्मनिष्ठानाम् अनन्तं ब्रह्मनिष्ठानाम् इति वेदान्तडिण्डिमः इति वेदान्तडिण्डिमः. सुखमल्पं बहुक्लेशो विषयग्राहिणां नृणाम् अनन्तं ब्रह्मनिष्ठानाम् इति वेदान्तडिण्डिमः. पीपल् हू सीक् प्लेजर्स् get a little joy and a lot of pain. On the other hand, declares Vedanta, those who abide in Brahman gain infinite happiness. So this is pointing out to the sukha viveka, or also sukha vichara, the looking into, examining what is happiness, what is contentment. And this is interesting because this is it's a very important thing. That's what we're looking for in life. We're looking for happiness, for contentment. And the sad thing is that how many people can, you know, put, you know, sincerely say, I'm a happy person. Not just, you know, yes, yeah, some of the time with this, but I'm really content, happy, that's it. Very, very rare, unfortunately, in this world. Very rare. And I'll tell you, that's one of the reasons I go to Uttarkashi every year, is somebody there, Linda knows him, Swami Premanandaji, is a happy person, there's no doubt, happy, joyful, loving, no doubt. So it's wonderful to see an example of this. And the thing is, we go to school, we learn so many things, many abilities, how to think, learn many different subjects, all this. But this most important thing is not taught like this. At least from a worldly perspective, how to live a balanced, content life, at least this should be taught, at least that one. But this one is forgotten. And of course, the full happiness, that's rare. So this is what it's looking into, what happens. And what happens, we're looking for it, and we're not very wise, most of us, you know, just about everybody isn't very wise, because we keep looking in the same way, although it doesn't totally do it. It's we get some happiness from certain conditions, certain things, we get some happiness. And then we see, okay, maybe if I do more of that, then I will be more happy. Maybe that will bring me to the total happiness. But we don't, doesn't tremendously increase our happiness. And we don't see people around us that really get to, you know, get to that. So meaning we're not looking in the right way. This is really the bottom line. But it takes a lot to look into that. It takes a lot to say, no, this isn't what's doing it. Let me really sincerely look into it. And so this verse is discussing that. So what happens is here, it's saying in the verse, Sukham alpam, just a little bit of joy, and bahu kleshaha, a lot of difficulty, suffering. Vishayagrahinam, nirinam, comes to the people who try to take, you know, get happiness from the worldly, from worldly objects like this, from the world like this. In here, graha, here, this root in Sanskrit, in English, it's similar root or same root as grab. We try to grab it. We try to, how can I squeeze out as much joy, as much happiness from the world? And really, it is much pleasure, well, from the world, you know, usually be pleasure from the world. And pleasure and happiness aren't necessarily the same thing. That's because pleasure is, if there's pleasure and pain are opposites, like this, pleasure and pain. If there's pleasure, there's pain. If something swings one way, it swings the other way. It's like I want to go on the roller coaster, but I only want to go up. Or I only want to go down. It doesn't work. There's going to be both. So if there's one, there's the other. You can't have, you know, one-sided coin. It doesn't work like this. So this is the thing. And so we're trying to get it through. And through what is it then? It's through Vishaya. What is Vishaya? An object of experience, meaning something I experience through the senses. And then we say, okay, from this perspective, what is the world? We say there's a world out there. But again, that's a conclusion. That's, you know, like a lot of science, it starts with, there is a world. You know, this is the axiom that's taken. There's a world, it's solid, it's real, it's out there, and now we're going to study it. Like this, this is, without that, what would science study, right? But here we say, what do you mean, world out there? How can you conclude? What is the world from our experience? It's sounds and touch, sense of touch, and sight, and taste and smell. That's what the world is from our experiential perspective. Take those away, where's your world? What's left? There's nothing left, right? You'll say, no, in my mind, I think of things in my mind. Well, you get information from the world and then you churn it in the mind. If there wasn't, like, you know, any numbers, crunching numbers in any way, unless there was information in the world, where does even numbers come from? There has to be some separation, something. So there has to be data. So the world, meaning I get things in, it's the five senses, that's what it is. So, and okay, so I'm grasping through the five senses. Now what happens is, okay, so I want certain things make me more happy, meaning it's a certain condition. This condition, now I'm going to be happy. This is contentment or happiness from some worldly things. Now, when we look at it, there's some defects in trying to get this. There are three main defects that are discussed. One of them is called, let me see, it's atripta karatvam. Doesn't give me full contentment, full happiness. Even the thing that gives you a lot of happiness from the world, it gives you, but how much? Oh, let's say it feels the 100%. Okay, it feels you 100%, but for how long? So this is one thing. It can make you happy only for so long. Some monks which have looked into it closely, they say 3 minutes maximum. After 3 minutes, the mind already wants something else, already is looking into something else, like this. Let's say we can extend a little bit or something, okay, still, but still, it's going to be limited and conditional. So this is one defect that I want to be fully happy, but then I'm trying to do in a conditional way, and then I can't be fully happy because of that. So meaning it doesn't give me what I'm looking for. So again, because that's how we know to get some happiness, so we look in that direction. But you know, again, as we said, it doesn't totally fulfill me. It gives some sense of fulfillment, but, you know, only so much. So this is one thing. Second thing, what is the term for it again? So it comes to my mind. It's going to be, the term means that it's mixed with pain. That it's going to be a dukkha mishritatvam. Dukkha mishritatvam, mix, mishra, mixed. A lot of the words similar, it comes from the same root, mishra, mix. So to get it, you're going through, to go through, you know, pain, sorrow, difficulty as well. Because in order to get to somebody wants to go on vacation somewhere. So they work extra hard, right? It takes them a lot to pull everything together to go. Finally, they go there. Finally, they got the time off from work. Finally, they got everything together. Finally, they get there. When they get there, they'll be there for a week. And after, takes them 2 days to unwind. And then, okay, I have my break from my work. I'm enjoying the beautiful scenery, all this. But then, but just 4 more days. And then I have to fly back and I go back to work on Monday. And then the joy is less. Oh no. And then also, you know, you're worrying, okay, what's happening there? What's happening at home? Like when I was away for that month, I was in the ashram. So one time the alarm went off at home. You know, what happens is the tenant, he came in, and because we have a tenant in separate in the back. So he came in to water the plants and he had forgotten to turn off the alarm, so it went off. So then, you know, he turned it off, but still it went off. So we got the alert and everything. So I can be on vacation enjoying it. I'm going to think, should I check my camera at home once in a while? Something happening. That's the worst thing with these cameras. You have people have the security cameras and it makes them less secure. They're going to constantly check on them. So you're worrying, is something wrong? So in this way, everything, anything you get the happiness from something, it takes a lot of effort. And also, first of all, everything has to align. You know, okay, I want to enjoy a certain food. I like a certain food in a certain way. First of all, it has to be made in that way. I need to be there and be able to taste it, right? Oh, I'm not well, I'm not well, I have a cold or something, I can't taste. Or my health isn't as good, so I shouldn't be eating, so I won't take it. Or I'll take it anyway, but then I'll feel bad afterwards. They have to align. Everything has to align, both all my indriyas, my senses, my mood for it. The food is brought so nicely that's made exactly how I like. But I had a big argument before that, so I can't really enjoy it. Or I'm worried, so I'm eating it, but I can't really focus on it. So everything has to align in order for me to really enjoy it. So it's so all of these to put everything in alignment for that. This is what happens. So this is what happens with the worldly joy, worldly fulfillment, is it's so, it's so fickle in this way. How fickle it is. And we want to have the happiness from that. So this is second defect. The third defect is what's called bandhakatvam, bound. You become bound by it, bondage, bandha. It becomes a habit. And now it's controlling me. There's a saying in Sanskrit which says that you think you're enjoying the things of the senses, that you're consuming them, but before you know it, they're consuming you. Because let's say I have to have my coffee or my tea, something every day, my fix. I'm used to it. Now I decide, okay, I'm not going to have that. Maybe my blood pressure is higher. I want to live a healthier lifestyle like this. Very good. So I manage to stop for a day or two. But the coffee is consuming me. I won't be able to stop, and the coffee keeps consuming me. Years ago, when I was in our ashram in New York, in the Shivananda Center in Manhattan there, then this book that I got is called Sugar Blues. Sugar Blues talks all about how sugar is unhealthy for you and how it's literally a drug. So I read it, and then I decided, okay, one month I won't have any sugar, anything. And so my Padma, who was there, who's a much more senior monk, much more senior than me, so he said, yes, you're going to stop, but soon you're going to have sugar blues, meaning you're going to not be able to not have sugar, and that's when it'll disturb you like this. And he was right, because, you know, you can do 1 month in this, but you don't manage to just keep it up like this, in this. So in any case, so what happens is this sugar then controls, not I control the sugar, right? Because I want and I have what I have, let's say. So what happens then is the habit is built, and then what used to make me happy, I'm doing out of habit, not that it's giving more happiness, but I'm not managing not to do because I'm so used to doing it like this. This is what happens. So these are the three defects that are seen then in trying to get in getting happiness from worldly things, and really it's sensation. What is it? What is seeing is a sensation, hearing sensation, from certain sensations. Swami Tatviranandji says that we are too much invested in sensate experience, in meaning things from the senses. I want to see in a certain way, touch in a certain way, taste a certain way. How much I'm caught up in this, how much difference that makes for us. Really interesting, like this. So we said it's the, first of all, first defect doesn't totally fulfill. Atripta karatvam doesn't really give fulfillment. And we said, second, we said dukkha mishritatvam, it mixed with dukkha, mixed with sorrow, with difficulties. That's pointed out here in this verse, the bahu kleshaha. And the third, we said bandhakatvam, it binds me. Now I'm unable not to do this, I'm dependent on this. So these are these three defects. So an illustration that's given about this is like this, that there was a dog, and this dog, it's the dog's owners are very nice and take care of it and all, but what happens is, you know how they have toys for the dogs, so it has a rubber bone, they give it this rubber bone, so it keeps playing, chewing on the toys it's getting. But it really wants to chew on a real bone, because that's what they like, the dogs, right? They don't want the artificial stuff. So one day, as the dog was sniffing around the yard, he found a real bone. Totally, it's very old and dry. Oh, this is marvelous. Today's my day. So he starts chewing on the bone. Now what happens is the bone, though, is very dry. So they like to chew on it and get some juice out of it, something, right? Not just chew on something dry like this. So the dog is frustrated. No, there must be some liquid in here, something left in here for me to enjoy. So it's chewing and chewing on it to get the joy out of it. Now what happens is, as the dog is chewing on it, the bone breaks in his mouth, and the bone cuts the top of his mouth. Right? To get the joy, some going through some sorrow, like we just said. Now, so some blood comes out, and he tastes that blood. Oh, I knew there was something very good in this. Ah, I reached the marrow. Oh, I'm so enjoying so much. Like this. This is the story of the dog and the bone. So what is the story about then from this? How does this fit in with what we're talking about? Is the world is jadam. World is insentient. You see colors and forms. It's insentient, right? Your conscious being. Happiness is part of the nature of the conscious being. We'll discuss more about why that is in a few minutes, but it's my nature. It's something I have to be a conscious being, right? The computer, you know, right now, the greatest computer chip ever created by Google. What the supercomputer can do, it can calculate in a few minutes, calculates what it'll take, you know, 10 to the power of 25 years for that supercomputer to create. Amazing. But can that computer be happy? It can't be happy because not a sentient being. So sentient. Now, colors, forms, meaning sight. It's something insentient. How can that be happy? How can something insentient do something sentient? Happiness is me, in me. Some sound, I hear some sound, meaning it's a dependency. I'm just a habit. Or certain taste. So what happens is that the mind is very busy. The mind is very busy and it's feels insufficient. Oh, I'm not having the best day. Oh, I'm not so good at this. Oh, the people said that. Oh, I have to take care of this. And then something helps to quiet the mind down for some time. Somebody says something nice, or I hear some nice music, I see the sunset, or I taste something that's tasty for me. So the mind quiets down. The whole idea of insufficiency dies down for a little while. Oh, this thing really made me happy. Wow, I really should go and see this more. I really should eat this more. I really should listen to these things more, like this kind of music. So what happens, just like the dog, what happens, where is that happiness? It's within me. Just my mind stopped making noise, so the happiness is there within myself. I'm content. So just what happens is just the noise of the mind died down. Now I became happy. So I attribute the happiness to that specific thing. But that specific thing just affected the state of mind. Now the mind isn't too busy, isn't running after things. Okay, now the contentment within me shines. Kind of like it's cloudy and then clouds part a bit and the sun comes through. The sun has nothing to do with the clouds, but I think it has something to do with them. The sun is there, clouds or no clouds, sun is there. So this is what happens. So the dog is thinking the happiness, the wonderful flavor is coming from the bone, but it's coming from himself, from his own mouth, from his own blood, like this. Now, the wise dog, after a little while, will say, hey, how much work I'm putting into this, how much pain it is, not worth it. Let me just spit out the bone and I'll just be content in myself, the wise dog. So the wise person sees, hey, I'm so dependent on these worldly things. When I drop them, how much more content I am. The more I drop the worldly things, the more I'm content in myself anyway, like this. I remember years back, I had read an article. Somebody, elderly, married a much younger woman. And he was very happy. This, and then after some time, she left him. So he became very depressed. So he thought, and this is a true story from some magazine, something. He just said, okay, forget it. Life isn't worth living. He went to some secluded area just to be there to just, you know, wither away. So just stayed, there was some body of water, a lake or something. So he'd drink water from the lake. He wouldn't eat anything. He just hung around. Now what happened was, so he's away from all the worldly things. He doesn't deal with all the worldly things in nature. Fasting helps to clean a system, drinking fresh water. So after a few days, he was so rejuvenated, so refreshed and everything, said, wow, I feel great. Let me go back and live my life happily. So by leaving all the worldly things, how wonderful, he felt so great. So he thought the worldly things were bringing the happiness, but it wasn't that. It was a conditional thing. But then afterwards found that, hey, it's, you know, it's in myself in this way. And when we look at our experience in deep sleep, I withdraw from all the worldly things. I drop everything. I'm only within myself. I put all my body, mind, all my ideas aside. And oh, it's so wonderful because I'm really going back into myself. Literally going to sleep, you're going back to the God and this, and which is yourself, and then coming out of it later in this way. So really, when you drop everything else, then you're just within yourself and you're full. That's where Purnatvam is, the fullness within you. We try to find it outside. Once you find it inside, you see that it's everywhere. Because then I'm not, when I just find it in myself, I'm not a limited being anymore. So there isn't, everything else is within that. So that's why we find it within ourselves. Then we'll see that, you know, that the Atma, Brahman, is in and through everything. It's not, you know, location or something like this. So this is an important thing. So in this way, this Brahmanishta, here being established in Brahman, meaning if I drop everything else, then I know just I am, and then I'm full. Nothing really affects it, and then I'm not limited, and that unlimitedness and me are not two different things. I don't need to go and obtain something. It's already there. In Vedanta, this is called praptasya praptihi, obtain. So ap is obtain. Pra is just the prefix. So praptasya praptihi, obtaining what's already obtained. I'm trying to obtain a happiness that I think is not obtained, so I keep running after it because it's unstable and can never stay, will never be stable like that. But obtained what is already obtained, meaning seeing what's already there, where I think I'm going to find it somewhere else, but it's just I drop the other stuff and I'll see it's there. So it says, I really want to be content. I really want that, really the fulfillment. Contentment is fullness. That's where I'll find it, not anywhere else like this. So this is what this verse is pointing out, a very important thing about the happiness like this, okay? That that the other way does not do it. You know, okay, some small joys in life and there's nothing wrong with, nobody's saying, but for us, this is something we have to inquire, look into, because again, the Vedanta points this out, and it's pointing at our experience, and then it's up to us to really look into it. It takes a lot to look into because it's easier to keep going along with my life, just as it is. Swami Shivananji gives a wonderful example of that. He says, going downhill on a bicycle is very easy. Anybody can do it. But climbing up the hill on the bicycle, that takes a lot of effort. So going downhill, meaning just going along my life as it is. So I'll continue with my regular habits and everything, not looking, not inquiring, very easy. But to really look into and inquire like this takes a lot to do. It takes a lot of guts to do it, somebody really has to want to do it because it's so much easier to just continue along the lines that no problem. I'll just continue. I have my small joys with my family and my free time, and I do my job. And after 20 years, then I can retire and just spend some more time and just keep going. No problem. But it doesn't solve the issues to solve. Then it takes effort to do it. It takes effort to really look into these things. So here Vedanta is pointing out, and then just for us to look at through this, take this to heart and look at ourselves sincerely with this. If we look sincerely with these pointers, it can really help us to, you know, to find what we're really looking for, you can say like this, okay? So this one looked into sukham, into the happiness, right? So also we'll look into dukkham here, the next verse here is discussing dukkha, the sorrow. Let's see what it says. It's number 78. Dhanair va dhanadaiv putrair. Dhanair va dhanadaiv putrair. Dara gara sahodaraihi. Dara gara sahodaraihi. Dhruvam pranaharair dukkham. Dhruvam pranaharair dukkham. Iti vedanta dindimaha. Iti vedanta dindimaha. Dhanair va dhanadaiv putrair dara gara sahodaraihi. Dhruvam pranaharair dukkham. Iti vedanta dindimaha. Wealth along with the means to gain it, sons, wife or husband, brothers and sisters or house, all of them drain the vitality of a person and cause him only sorrow, declares Vedanta. So here now, dukkha vichara, looking into the sorrow. So in this verse, giving some of the, sometimes it will give some harsh medicine. You like a very sour medicine. I remember years ago fasting and taking neem leaves. You boil them for a long time, it becomes black. You keep it and you drink that. That is very, very hard to drink in this. Or some of these Chinese medicines, like here's the Chinese herbs. You boil them. When I was in the Shivananda Center in New York, at some point there were one or two ladies, residents in the center. They used to boil those, get those herbs. It smelled so bad. So I said, you can only boil them, not at the time, not during hours that are open when students come. We don't want it to smell like this. So those taste horrible. Very good for your health, but horrible. So very bitter medicine if you want. It's saying like this. But the thing is, why does the Chinese doctor prescribe that medicine? Not in order to make you suffer, right? But to help to cure. So some of the truths are bitter truths to look into like this. So here it's not talking about love, because it talked about family members. Love for family members, no problem. But the problem is attachment. The attachment is what brings sorrow, not love. Love never brings any sorrow like this. So this is what's being pointed out in this verse, that we have to be aware of these things. So it says here, okay, the wealth and obtaining wealth like this. Well, of course, obtaining wealth and already there's a lot of effort and strain in this, so we can already say it's not, some people just enjoy working. So it's not because they're going to obtain the wealth, right? If it's just they're working for the money, then it's not as easy. But in any case, the wealth, if I'm working for the wealth and I think the wealth makes me happy like this, that's an attachment, meaning tomorrow what will I do if the wealth isn't there? And I consider it mine. And I consider the wealth is mine, it'll bring worry because I'm afraid that you're going to ask me to lend some or give some to you. And I want to hold on to it. And I'm going to worry that that somebody's going to come and take it from me, steal it from me. So it's going to cause strain, worry in this. This is an issue. So I think possessions are going to bring that. And it's my attachment to it. Because really, in the Ishavasya Upanishad, it says there in the first verse, it says, Ishavasya Midam Sarvam, one God dwells in everything. Yatkin Cham Jagatyam Jagat, everything, moving, unmoving, sentient, living, non-living in the world. Tena Tatena Bhunjita, by renunciation, you can help to protect this vision. Magridah Kasya Svidhanam, and don't covet anybody's wealth. But kasya svidhanam can be anybody's wealth, or can also mean whose wealth is this? Whose is this? I have this house. Whose house is it? It's my house? What do you mean my house? Right? I say it's my house. Tomorrow I didn't pay the bank the monthly payment. The bank is going to take it. Say it's our house. Sorry, you have to leave. Right? Some court case comes around. Okay, they'll say it's my house. Some law, they change some law. Eastern European countries, at certain point, some people had a big, nice house. New regime came in, communism. No, sorry, it's not yours. You have to share. You can keep one room. These other 10 families move in. It's their place as well. What do you mean yours? Right? Whatever I say is mine, what do I mean mine? It's a convention in society that, yes, what's here in my house, I'll keep. You don't just come in without asking. You don't take it. We don't take other people's things. It's a convention. But really speaking, what do you mean by that? A few hundred years ago, before the Western civilization came here, the natives, the Westerners first came from Europe, came, and they wanted to get land from the natives. They kind of looked at them. What do you mean, buy land? There's this land. There's nobody, it's no person's land. They said, what do you mean by that? So in this way, my property, what do you mean property? So this is something to think about because, okay, what do you mean it's mine? It's mine, I'm attached to it. Okay, it's convenient to have. Because like one time when, you know, I had something stolen, it was very inconvenient not to have your proper ID, not to have the credit card, you know, very inconvenient. Inconvenient to get them, inconvenient that the shop, you can't get certain things you need to. So it's very inconvenient. Yeah, that's true. Convenience is what, so for that. So, you know, also we live with family. It's a convenient thing. It's a practical thing. But the thing, my attachment to the things that creates that's the issue. Like this. You use things for, you know, what they're good for, what they're useful for. Like this. Use for that. Beyond that. And actually, this is one of the reasons Raja Yoga talks about them in Yama Niyama. They put two yamas for it. Aparigraha, asteya. Two that are pretty much same thing. Right? One, don't keep more than what you need. One, don't covet to have something you don't need like this. Both are there to make it very clear. Live simply, not beyond what you need. Because, meaning you're attached to, why do you have to hold on to? What is it for? You know, meaning I'm having more than I need, I'm attached to it. That attachment, now it's going to cause me problem, cause me insecurity, because I want, what'll happen if I don't have this, right? Causes greed, right? I want to hoard more than necessary like this. So all these things for us to think about like this, okay? So in this way, so it's very important like this with things that we have, possessions we have, really for us to think about regularly. Whatever we don't use for some time, do we need it? We could, you know, somebody else can use it or something like this. But for us to really see the objects that are there, okay, there, am I attached to them? You know, what'll happen if if the house burns down, everything's gone? What'll happen? Okay. As we said, inconvenient, but... And to remember that all those things are just fleeting. It's like this. It's not. So this is an important thing. Now, of course, more than that, then, is attachment to people, to close, to family, etc. This, of course, is. But what happens is, okay, so I say I love my family. I love certain people. But then, the love is there. Not saying that, you know, nobody says there isn't love, but is how much expectation is in with that, is mixed in. I expect them to act in a certain way. I expect them to do certain things. Well, that's expectation. That's attachment. I have expectation to. Do I want them to give me freedom to do what I want? Yes. You know, at a responsibility, they'll say, hey, you know, you shouldn't really do like this. It's not really healthy for you, or it's a wrong thing to do. Yeah. that we expect, because that's our duty for the people around us. It's our duty to help each other like this. That's out of duty, out of care we do. But the thing is, they won't say, you absolutely can't do. No, okay. We wouldn't want them to say, they suggest don't do, but you do as you think is right. Right? So we have, and then we expect them to do in a certain way, expect them to do certain things. And when that isn't there, then suddenly we're caught off guard. We feel hurt. We feel the person should do like this. But then, why? Each person is free in this world to do what they think is right. How can I decide what's best for everybody to do? Like this. As though I have the golden standard that I know. If everybody listens to me, does exactly how I want with this circle around me, then everything will be okay. Usually if we leave alone, then people find... This is one thing I found, actually, interestingly. Different places when being in charge of things. I found that, you know, I think things should be done in a certain way, and some things I know, so yes, to do in this way. But some things that you don't, you have the other person does instead, they find more creative, better ways to do than you thought, and you're more experienced than you thought should be done. So my idea, I think my idea has to be, why does it be my idea? Right? And let's say things are done a little differently. Okay, it'll be done a little differently. What's the big deal? You know, okay, so a little differently. That's so the sky's not going to fall. They don't do it perfect. Okay. One time in the center of New York when I was there, then we'd have different staff would come and go. Like people would stay 3 months, 6 months, up to a few years like this usually. People would do our every day, count up the money, fill it in the accounting, put it in the bank like this. So our accountant would always point out some things, you know, these few things are off. So one time I said to him, oh yeah, we've somebody new doing it, so I think he'll do a little better. He said, no worries, we're all here to learn. Don't worry about that. What a nice outlook at it. No, just because it wasn't done okay, that's not a big deal like this. So you learn from everybody. The accountant that just does was doing our books there, that we'd bring the things to him, learned a lot from him like this. But in any case, so that we have to be very aware of, that my attachment expectation to those around me, like this. And then other thing, do I love these people around me, but those other people I don't care for too much, like this? Meaning, if I really love, why do I love these people, not everybody else? Yes, these are the people around me that it's my duty to take care of, so I will, you know, so I will do that, and will do it the most loving way, etc. But that does that mean that others, that my love shouldn't be equal to everybody else, then I'm limiting myself? Then that is, you know, me and my family syndrome. They say the example that's given is in the salt water. You have, you know, the salt is melted everywhere in the water, but certain areas it just crystallizes, the salt just crystallizes. So it's not, you know, it doesn't flow with the water anymore. So I crystallize around these people. And then what? And then I crystallize people that have same kind of belief like me. Okay, those I can care about. The other ones, I'm not so sure. Those that, you know, certain political views that I have, the other ones, I'm not so sure. Like this, all of these things. Some teacher was talking about, I forget which great Mahatma in India, there was one who was well known at some point. So people would come to him regularly, come to him for blessings and everything. There were some dacoits that would come once in a while in this. He would feed them, treat them lovingly, just like everybody else. No difference. Didn't see any difference because saw it equally to everything, everybody in this way. Why, you know, just because people are, you know, live in this way or that way, you know, it's not his place to go and punish them, you know. He just treated everybody equally lovingly like this. This is such a beautiful way like this. So in this way, our outlook should be like this. Because I want to go beyond sorrow, but that limitation I'm putting on myself, where by nature, what happens is, as an unlimited being, the love is there for everything and everybody, because the unlimitedness manifests as love within the heart. And by limiting that I love some and not others, meaning I'm limiting myself in this way. Swami Premanandaji in Uttarkashi, his mother came once, long time ago. She is no more, he's in his mid-80s. So she came long time before when he was there, and she would call him, my son, and he got very upset at her. And also in India, somebody renounces monk, people just respect as a monk like this, because it became universal. So he said, am I your son? What about all those poor children where you live? Because he's in Uttarkashi, and she's in Odisha, way in the east side. What about them? Are they not your children as well? They don't deserve your love and care as well. So she totally changed. She went back and she took care of so many poor children in the area like that. So really what his scolding to her, what he pointed out, had changed her vision of things like this. So in this way. So again, it's not saying here, don't love family, right? Don't use things in the world, isn't it? Don't use things, but be very aware, because we mistake using things that are needed for what I need to get done, for possessing, become attached. Loving, we confuse for attachment, expectation. Attachment then also brings fear. I'm afraid that if I don't, that what will happen? What will happen if these people won't be there? What will happen to me? Well, get along. I'll get along fine. They're giving me full freedom to do what I need. I give them full freedom. If they want to walk and do something else, bless them, great. Let them go. Very happy. No problem. Like this. So these are some things we have to be aware of like this. So another example that's given is that the moonlight, when the full moon is there, the moonlight is soothing equally everywhere. It's not limiting to some one place or the other. It's not that the moonlight is there, beautiful moonlight, nice light, that right here, I see it and I'm enjoying it, but somebody's on the other side there and I don't think there is, I don't think their character, have question about their character, that the moon is going to have it like this. So the moonlight doesn't limit itself in this way. The moonlight is equal like this to everybody in this way. Okay. Now one other thing that happens is, consciously or subconsciously, we're aware of the fact, whatever things I have here, whatever people around me, it's going to be temporary. It's not going to stay. They won't be, the things won't be there forever. Everything will change. And whatever is around me now, at some point later, won't be around me. That's the way the world is. Inconvenient truth, if some people may see like this, but it's not just, that's just how it is, because that's the world. Nothing remains permanent, so nothing is permanently with me. So by not really looking into this and accepting it, that's a fact, and really seeing that's how it is, it's nature, then it brings a lot more concern and worry, a lot of worry. What will happen when this isn't there, when this person isn't there, when, what will then I'll start worrying, what happens if this, what happens if that? But if I accept whatever is here now, tomorrow there's no guarantee. So I know whether it's here or not, won't be there, I'm fine, because I'm not dependent on it. Useful? Not there? Fine. Otherwise, when, first of all, there will be fear. What will happen if? What will happen when? And then also, when that when comes, then it's going to be, I'll be very much shaken up like this. How shaken up I'll be like this. We read in the paper all the time how many people are dying in this world, how many people are suffering different things, how much loss. And the thing is that we read that, but then we have to think, tomorrow will be my turn too. I'm going to go through my, you know, my losses too. There's no way that I won't in this way. So that's where having the, you know, accepting this is very important in this way. Otherwise, how difficult. Somebody that we know, in her, she's 87 now. So she's in an old age home. And slowly over time, we've been seeing less and less able to do things. Now barely being able to do anything like this there. But has been always very patient, very sweet to everybody that comes and all. And you know, when you're in an old, it's a pretty good facility, so that's nice. Things are taken care of. So she is fortunate like this. But family, once a week or so, will come, or something like this, twice a week for some things to help out. But most of the time, just relying on the people there. And some people take care nice, some not as nice. But she's very sweet to everybody there. How patient you have to be if it takes you forever to just be able to eat something. You need help anybody to move in this. And to remain so sweet, composed like this, I say, if I can do half of that, if my time comes like this, it'll be a great achievement. So it's really accepting like this, accepting that, that acceptance has to be there. Because the relying on the temporary and the ephemeral is not going, is only going to bring, you know, so the inconvenient truth, accepting it, looking into it, that's how it is. Now, that doesn't, so still the people around me, that doesn't mean, oh, they're insignificant because they're temporary there. Yes, everybody deserves as much love as can give, but then, but being wary of the attachment. And the thing is, we learn on ourselves. We learn ourselves. We learn how, you know, we're trying, we try to control, we expect and everything. We see how, we have to see it on ourselves, see how that comes up and see how we can, you know, how that isn't going to be conducive. I'll say, well, the other person is, the other person they're expecting, they're attaching this. Well, that's them. That's not you. All right. So, you know, we're looking into these things. And I'm looking into, I want to know who I am behind all this. Everybody really wants to, but isn't taking the time to do it. They're not doing. Do we expect for other people to do it? You know, everybody look into how much they're ready and at the right time for them. We can't do. Same with other things. People do as they're ready in the right place and time. So what happens is, really speaking, we don't lack anything. We don't need anything. We're, as consciousness, I'm not limited by anything. I'm not conditioned by anything. Nothing will affect me. I don't need to do anything, get to anything. That's really the bottom line. But as I identify as the body-mind, then the needs of the body-mind, then I take them onto Atma. Yes, the body needs certain things, but then the body gets, that's why some simple living is very helpful, because then I get dependent. Certain things I get dependent on unnecessarily. But I take those things onto Atma. Yes, the body needs some food, shelter. Atma isn't touched by these in this way. But really, from Atma perspective, what do you need? You're aware. What do you need? What effort do you do to be aware conscious? What effort, right? What have you done that has improved the fact that you're aware conscious? What have you done that makes you less aware and conscious? Yes, you know, tamasic things, whatever, excitement, it covers it up a bit, but it's still there. So this is just there as a given. We call choiceless awareness, because it's there regardless. No choice in fact. Other things you can make some choices, and you know, I'll eat this food or this, I'll live in this lifestyle or that lifestyle, I'll live with family without family, whatever it is. But here, what choice is there? So choiceless awareness, what does that need? Where is it? So the more the discrimination, clarity about that, the more I see what is it that I need, you know? What do I really need? We have to look into that, because I keep thinking I am dependent on something, right? They say dependence when you're filling out certain forms for taxes, you're dependence, right? Like this, in this way. People say they want to be independent. They want to be independent, meaning they want to do what they want, how they want, when they want. And in, you know, our day and age, we have that more than almost anybody's had at any time, like this. How much we can do, but that has that brought us the happiness we want? Yes, it's some freedom, but not full freedom happiness. So how much more do I need to do? How much more do I need to get? How much more do I need support from others, and do I need the others around this in order for me to really, you know, find my contentment? One time, Swami Vivekananda, he and the other disciple with Ramakrishna. So Ramakrishna at some point started ignoring him, like paying attention to other disciples, other people, this, but him, he would just ignore this. For some time this was going on. And some of the brother disciples said, oh, he used to really love you, or his favorite and everything, he's just not paying attention. He doesn't love you anymore, I don't know, are you going to leave, or what are you going to do? He said, well, is that it? What he does towards me, that doesn't make a difference. You know, I love the master, that I know. This, that's all that counts, like this. So what the other people around do, that's their problem, how they act in this. But that, you know, I've too, you know, soar above all these things, soar above all the differences, all this. The more I go deeper in myself, the more I soar above and beyond all the nonsense of the world. And so this is what's very important. So in this way, because anything else I'm holding on to, I'm limiting myself in this way. Interesting, just now in the Gita class, the verse that in the chapter 6 on meditation, the verse there is talking about what is yoga, but it says there yoga is counter to what we say yoga. It says dukkha sanyoga viyoga. The connection with yoga, with dukkham, with sorrow, it's total disassociation from it. Meaning total having full atmanatma viveka, understanding I'm not this limited individual, then I see the sorrow doesn't touch me. I'm beyond all sorrow. It cannot touch me, because that is just something in the mind. Pain in the body, sorrow in the mind. Doesn't touch atma like this. So interesting that has some similar connotation to what's here, and that's a very important verse in there, that the only way then beyond the dukkham is to look into these things and to see that, you know, nothing is causing me sorrow. I cause the sorrow by my expectation, attachment, by my false identification. That's all, not by anything else. This is what's being pointed out. So this is what this verse here is saying. Dhanairva dhanadaihi, the wealth, obtaining wealth, putra putraihi, by progeny, by my children, dara by spouse, gara by my house, sohodaraihi by my siblings, meaning all family, dhruvam prana haraihi, these ones will surely take away all my energy, because all my worry. I worry, I expect, I get upset, right? All these things, all the energy gets depleted. It's the attitude, it's not the person, it's my attitude, like this. Dukkham, it depletes through the different different ways that the dukkha, the sorrow, manifests. Iti Vedanta Jindima, so that's why important to understand this, because a lot of times people hear some verse like this will say Vedanta is pessimistic. But it's not pessimistic, just like that medicine is for curing, for optimism, for understanding. It's for understanding. Is that pessimistic or not? In the end, it's the most optimistic thing. But also it's a fact of looking into, inquiring. Really taking these things, looking into them. You know, vichara, I really look closely into. It's not that I just take, okay, these are some points that are brought up. I have to look into them. I'll just accept, yes, the Upanishad said this, I'm going to follow. No, I have to look into, I have to inquire, look into. And this way makes sense. I have to see on my own skin like this. So we finished with this today. So we looked at Sukha and Dukkha both today. Om Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. So before we go, if anybody has any questions or unclarities.
I have a question.
Yes.
So obviously we're talking about, you know, expectations, right, and how that, you know, is connected to attachment, which then is not particularly fruitful to have. But then if we have children, right, and we want our child to be happy, good health, have experiences that lead to wisdom, is that also considered having expectations for our children, or does that fall into a different category?
Well, that's one with children. We have to love and do our duty towards them, right? So the thing is, we have to do our best. It's our duty, and our duty towards them, and that also is towards society, right? You do your duty well. It's better for this. You're serving society well too. So of course, that would be very much more difficult, I would say, to do than other things without attachment. But it's a very good, you know, training ground for it, for sure, you know. So that too is because the thing is, they're never going to do exactly, how we want or how we expect. It's never going to be like that, right? So the thing is, on the one hand, people, they say they get the most joy from their children, but then they get the most pain too. So it's the attachment expectation that does that. If it's just love for them, why would they, you know? So again, we're in the world, so we're to grow and learn. So meaning, yes, we're, you know, to say we're not we don't have expectation for our children, from our spouses, from our family and this. Okay, that's, we can say, but we have to really look into and see what, you know, and look into that. There's a beautiful, the Khalil Gibran, the poet, he has a beautiful and one poem about our children. I think it's in the Prophet in there. That one really talks about they come through you. They're not yours. They come through you. They're, you know, says something. They're living for the future, but you're the past. You can't enter their place. You just think. So that's why there's always the generation gap, because the previous one sees a world in a certain way, they expect the next to do, but the other ones are seeing differently because the world is changing and each person sees differently. So yes, one should do the best, whatever means they can do the best. And then anything we do is karma yoga, then the result isn't in my hands. Yes, so I do my best. Some of the things they'll be grateful for, the children, some not. Some of the things they'll do as we expect, some not. I have to accept because conscious being doing what they want, number one. Number two, it's the world. The world is going to dance. It won't dance to my tune. So I think having children is one probably great training ground for this if one is, you know, looking to learn and grow with that. So one has to do out of duty, out of love, and not out of attachment expectation. And yes, we would say it is more difficult, no doubt. It's an advanced course, I'm sure. So next week, we're continuing our last Dindima for the year. Then in January, probably, I think it's the 9th, is that? Yeah, the 9th. We'll start then our Driktisha Viveka class. So that's what we'll do. And as we said, we will do it at 6 p.m. because we haven't had anybody saying they have to do 7, and Malini can't do 7, so why change the time if it's not, you know, if it's, it doesn't really make a difference from skyfall for people like that. So I look forward to that. I'll send an email about it and everything. So some other people, if they want to join, they're welcome to. And as the email I sent on Sundays, we're going to have the Tattva Bodha class. And that's a very good introduction. If somebody hasn't done that, I would recommend, if you have time, you come, you know, if your time permits, or if you know anybody that may be interested, they can sign up, you know, they can check it out. They can take a few classes, doesn't work, you know, doesn't speak to them. Okay, they took a few classes, something interesting left, no big deal. But anybody interested, they can contact me, they can also join. Okay. So have a good week, and we'll continue next time.
Thank you. Sorry I was late.
Good to have you back.
I won't be able to be here next week, so I will see you in